the podcast to the show. You can listen to or know.
Welcome to our Ted Lasso talk, the Tedcast. Welcome all Greyhound fans. Welcome all you sinners from the dog track and all the AFC Richmond fans around the world. It's the Lasso way around these parts with Coach and Boss. Without further ado, Coach Castleton.
Okay, welcome back, beautiful people. Today we're discussing Ted Lasso, Season 2, Episode 11, The Midnight Train to Royston. I am your host, Coach Castleton. This is Part 5 of our continuing coverage. With me, as always, is Coach Bishop.
This is a fascinating look at when is cheating.
Yeah, no, for sure. A lot of people don't put a great amount of stock in emotional cheating or like emotional transgression. Uh-huh. There's that whole school of thought of like, if you're not flirting, you're not trying. You know, there's a whole. I'm married. I'm not dead. But there's a lot. With us is our boss, Emily Chambers.
I want to say, number one, I don't care about any form of cheating as long as she's not hotter than me. Only thing I care about, that everything else I could get past, that's fine.
I love it.
But number two, more importantly, you know what I really love? Is regulation. So people talk about how Chicago's a hellhole. And one of the first things I want to say to them is, have you seen our tenants' bill of rights? Because it's not even renters, it's the tenants. If you live in an apartment in Chicago, you have rights and there are laws and your landlords could usually go fuck themselves. To the point, Chicago landlords very rarely even charge you a security deposit because it's a whole fucking thing being in escrow and interest and they're not going to fuck with it. The reason I bring this up is that Wednesday evening-ish, the super calls me and he's like, hey, also because Chicago has a lot of mixed-use zoning, so the unit underneath mine is a commercial space. And he calls me and he's like, hey, they have a drip. Like, are you running the water in your unit? And I was like, I just ran the dishwasher. And he's like, can you not? And I was like, I guess that's fine. Whatever. So I stopped the dishwasher. He's like, I'll be over tomorrow to check it. And he comes over on Thursday. He's like, yeah, it needs to be replaced. I'm like, that's cool. You replaced it months ago, but I guess that's fine. So then when I'm home yesterday afternoon, I'm washing a pan to make my dinner. And he calls and he's like, they've got the leak again. Whatever you're doing, can you stop? And I'm like, nope. Cause I'm washing a dish to make my dinner. So like, I don't know what you want me to do. And he's like, is there any chance that you could use the water in the kitchen as little as possible? And I'm like, I guess like I could order takeout on a Friday night. That sounds fine. I could work with you on this. Right before we started recording this show, I colored my hair. I get into the shower. While I'm in the shower, I get four calls from the super saying you can't use whatever water.
So now you can't shower either.
And I'm like, so now I can't shower.
Yeah.
And I'm like, does this mean that I also can't flush the toilet? Because we are getting to a space where this is uninhabitable. Like, I don't know what you fucking want me to do with this. He's like, we're going to replace the washer on Monday. We're going to like check all the pipes. We're going to fix the leak. We're going to do all of that. If you could just not use the water from now until Monday.
Oh, really?
And I'm like, I can absolutely do that. Because what's going to happen is I am going to not pay rent for the days for Friday through Monday. And I'm going to go check into a hotel and I will take that off the rent. And all of my meals for the weekend, I'm going to take that off the rent also because I can't be in my apartment. So you guys are going to have to cover this. And he said, do you have a friend you could stay with? And I said, probably. And then he said, okay, well, I guess just like try to use the water as little as possible, but we won't tell you not to use it. But like, if you can, just try not to so much. And I was like, oh, okay, that sounds great. I'm going to finish my shower now.
Wow.
Because I got out of it in order to talk to you about this bullshit. Right.
To answer this fourth call. Wow.
But I got to do all of that because Chicago was like, hey, landlords don't get to just fuck over tenants. So thank you to the city of Chicago for allowing me
to do that. I promise you, anytime I hear someone railing against regulations, I'm like, who are you looking to destroy? Who are you about? Yeah. Like, I just, it's knee jerk for me. Like, immediately, I'm like, who is it you think you thought you were going to get to abuse? who you're not going to get to abuse now. So I'm glad. I am glad that is in place. Yes.
Oh my God, I love it so much. I also, even though I worked a shitty job in the accounting office at a property management company for a couple of years, I am grateful for the knowledge that the tenant bill of rights exists because I have used it at all of my apartments. I'm like, well, actually, we're not going to do that. This is how we're going to handle this situation. So it's great.
Thank you, boss. Yeah, I appreciate all that. And I'm glad that you're, able to navigate that stuff. It's such a, having been, I grew up in a family where we were landlords all the time. So hearing, about, you know, what you're going through, I know what the landlord's juggling. So, and I assume they're good people. So that's probably a terrible assumption. But then I think, oh God, like, how do you balance it? You're the landlord. You're like, okay, I got this tenant. I don't want to put her out. But every time she sneezes and there's a drip of water from the faucet, there's a flood in a commercial thing, which is affecting their business. Like, you know, you just don't want anybody to be put out at all. But you rightly point out, I will say, this is something that I'm terrible at. But you are paying for a living space. You're not paying for a borrowing space or a, you know, half of a living.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you're paying for. So there has to be a remuneration, some kind of compensation if you are put out of that space. And it sounds like they're trying to dance around that as well. But yeah, tough.
That is the only thing. I don't want to make this sound like a moral issue. I don't think that they're bad people because they can't figure out how to fix this fucking leak. I just mean, if you need me to not use my apartment, I need money to be somewhere else. It's the only thing that pissed me off when he was like, can you go stay with a friend? I'm like, oh, so I'm supposed to impose on my friend instead of the business that you work for covering your expenses.
I thought you were going to say, well, I can come stay with you.
That's funny.
Oh, fuck that. Absolutely not.
You probably, I'm guessing you're a landlord. You probably have extra space. You have like a guest bedroom
I have a hard time. It's funny that I used to just fall asleep wherever I felt like in college and high school, especially after some drinks. I'd be like, this is where I'm sleeping now. This is fine. Right. Because now it's like two or three people where I'm like, yes, I would feel completely 100% comfortable staying at your apartment. And no, it's probably more like five or seven. But anyway,
it's not a long list.
If someone's like, oh, you could crash with my second cousin who lives in that city, I'd be like, I would rather sleep outside, honest to God. I cannot. That makes me feel so uncomfortable. I can't do that.
Right. I also point out that there's different tiers of landlords. So there's the landlord, like the top of the food chain is the landlord that owns like a high rise or apartment building, and it's just like a corporate entity for them. They don't know that it's a business to them, and they have an entire team of people, managers and things like that, that run the enterprise. And it's, you know, that's like when you think evil landlord or that kind of thing, or slumlord, it's like when they're that far detached. But I think the statistics would bear out that most of the resident, you know what, this is probably changing and this is like a problem with the industry, but this is where corporations are buying up all the living space. But once upon a time, it was like your landlord probably has less money than you do. You know, like they've leveraged everything to every single part of their, this is what my family was. We're just like, you know, oh, we're going to get to the promised land someday when all the stuff is paid off. And you know what I mean? And then it'll just be like straight income. You know, that was like the dream. And I'm like, I don't know if I have a brother who got there. I have a brother who built six duplexes. In the middle of the woods, in Nowheresville. Like, I was like, why is he building these? Like, I was like, this is so stupid. It was a rural town. He built six duplexes. And so it's 12 units. And years later, he paid them all off. And now he never worries about money. Yeah, because of these six things that he did. It was like we were so broke. I remember when he got a bid for what it would cost to dig out the foundations, dig and pour the foundations. And he's like, what? Like, he couldn't believe how much it cost. So he went and got his license. He was like, I will just do that myself. He took a 6-month course and whatever. And then he dug all the foundations and we were over there helping him pour foundations. And you know what I mean? But and But anyway, so when it's that type of landlord, I go, you know, that just feels like it's not all the same animal to me. But yeah, I get it.
In either case, and I definitely hear you, Coach, on that, because I've actually thought about investment properties and looked into stuff like that. So I know that it can be. My big thing is, and I've become better at spotting this faster and faster the older I get, when somebody tries to make their problem my problem. Like, you have a problem.
Yep.
You own a mm-hmm. building with a leak. You have a problem. You want to make that my problem. You want me to go showerless and hungry until you can deal with your problem. That's not my problem. It's not personal. I'm just saying, if we're going to divvy up whose problem that is, that one's yours. And I think, you know, that drives me crazy.
I'll just say quickly, one of the trips I took with the family to Disney World, which I wouldn't do by myself, the younger niece got sick, as kids do. Like, she just threw up out of nowhere, vomited at an amusement park. Go figure. So the following morning, I was tasked with taking the older niece on the bus to the park so that my sister and the other niece could like spend a little more time settling down and seeing if she felt good. On the bus, my niece, it's just like kind of going through the stressors of it. She was like, well, what happens if she's still sick tonight? And I said, well, she'll sleep in bed with mom and you could sleep in bed with me. She goes, oh, okay. But sometimes I kick. What if I kick you while we're sleeping? And I said, that's fine. I'm a grown up. I'll be okay. That's not going to be a problem. She was like, okay, well, what if I throw up? And I said, then I will clean you up and we will put you in clean pajamas and we will go back to sleep and it'll be fine. She goes, oh, okay. Sometimes I fall off the bed when I'm sleeping though. Like if I move around too much, sometimes I fall off. What are we going to do? And I said, that sounds like a you problem. And the family next to me, like the guy kind of chuckled a little bit and then his wife elbowed him in the ribs. And I was like, I'll pick you up and put you in bed. But like, I don't know, man, wake up. You're on the floor. Sleep in the bed now.
I mean, in fairness,
it was a her problem. It was not a me problem. I couldn't do anything about that.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, no, I was going to say, yeah. Boss is laughing at my, I'm horrified. That is a horrifying response to a child. Oh my God. Oh, yeah, no. There, it's funny. There are some sayings that have become in vogue lately. Coach, first of all, you are 100% right. And I think, you're taking your problem and trying to make it my problem. And how dare I have the audacity to point this out? Like, we've been so conditioned for the have nots to absorb the problems of the haves. 100%. And this is really good. And so all of this is factual, yes. And it's good. And I agree with it. I do not like the saying that sounds like a you problem. It's one of those things that has happened recently. And while I will find that I'm usually on the side of the person saying that when we get down to the nitty gritty, but I don't like the term. I also don't like it. It's up there with me. Well, for different reasons, but you get what you get and you don't get upset. Have you heard this one?
Yeah. And I'm like, my kids were in school. That was the first time I heard it when they were little. I was like,
yeah, me too. And I was like, what? Your teacher said this? And I was like, so I went and talked to the teacher. I was like, what does that mean? Like, I understand it's a thing that you say to eat, to like, to get through a otherwise difficult thing. But like, you understand what that, like, I'm like, cause I had never heard it before. And she was like, oh, we grew up with this all the time.
Yeah.
Now it's become very, very common. Mm-hmm. You get what you get and you don't get upset. This is if somebody in the class gets screwed, if everybody gets a gold pen and one kid gets a silver pen and goes, hey, sorry, just curious. Why don't I get a gold pen? You get what you get. You don't get upset. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know about that. Like, is there a better phrase for making people pawns of the oppressor more than eat your fucking scoop of shit and like it and that's it? Don't even question it. It's like, yeah. You don't get upset because like I want you to be programmed to not react to the unfairness that has just been exhibited. I'm like, this doesn't.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I reacted to it probably like a similar reaction of like, I'm not sure I would always apply that. And I get why if you teach kindergarten and you have to deal with, but I like that red crayon more than this red crayon, where you'd be like, okay, we're not doing this all goddamn. I am not going to play judge and jury to the who got the better red crayon thing. Right. So like, I'm with you.
Teach them another way. Then let's talk it out. Then let's make an agreement about sharing. Let's, whatever it is.
Right. But not, right?
It means it's in the, it, this is what I promised my kids I would never say because I told you so, because I grew up in a family that. Because I told you so. And that's it. And I would say to them before I got hit, I would say, because I grew up in a hitting family, I would say, of course you say that. You always say that because you don't have a defense and you haven't thought through the problem. And then I would get clobbered.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. But I was I don't give a shit. I mean, it gets me so crazy. And to this day, I've said, because I told you so, now it's like a joke with us. That and... I swear to God, don't make me spank you or something like that about spanking, because they know I'll never hit them. Right. So it's like now it's like a joke. Or if I say, oh, you know, whatever, because I told you so, all the kids will start laughing. They're like, oh man, whew, dad's really lost it. Like he's, you know, but that's the thing, because you say, because you either don't have the time or the effort to explain the real reason, or you don't respect their intelligence enough for them to grasp the real reason, you know, whatever it is, whatever. It just, you know, against it because I grew up with it. It was constant and I was so grossed out by it as a parenting methodology. That's just me.
No, I hear you on that. And it's funny we've gone from the original one, but that one of, I told you so, I didn't get a ton of that actually. Both my parents were pretty willing to, you know, say this is why, or not just because I said, but like, that's my decision. Like, which to me is different than because I told you so.
Yes.
Because to me, I told, like it's like, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. Guess what I am? I'm in charge. Yes. And I had to make a decision, and now I have. And to me, that's different than, like, as if it came on, like, stone tablets or some shit. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Right. No, I've said no, and that's it. Sure, that's it. Okay, good. You do have the right to be in charge. But when it's like, oh, I'm in charge, and also I don't know why I did it, you know, because I said it and that's it. Like, okay, well, why'd you say it? Well,
I don't really know because that was my knee jerk reaction, of which I have no understanding. Okay,
even if they said that, I would have been thrilled. I would have been thrilled growing up when having. Like, I don't know why I said it. I don't know why I do half the things I do. I would be like, thank you, but it wasn't like that. It was like, oh. The judgment has come down from upon high. I'm like, do you have any idea where that judgment came from, or what abuse in your past made you choose that? Or, you know what I mean? I'm like, what?
It's really shocking that you and I have moved away from religion. It seems like we're really, we are built for a system where people just yell random things from the front of the room and then we just follow it.
It's a mystery. All right. All right, today we're diving in right with Miss Bowen Roy. He is in her classroom, and boss, we're going to pick it up from Is That a Younger Year? Can you take it away from here, please?
He is not impressed with the drawing. Is that a younger year? Nope, same year. Then why is their picture shit and yours are not shit? Oh, well, I take the picture before they can fuck them up. They hate it. But I know it's for the best, which I kind of like. And it's not that I think that parents or adults know better than kids do. It's that I have read, God damn it. Why am I blanking on his name now? The New Hampshire guy, not John Grisham. He did World According to Garf, John Irving. There we go. Christ, I sound like an asshole. I've read his books before, and I have also seen the movies that were turned into movies from his books. And the man needs a heavy-handed editor. And it is a founding principle of my life that you need somebody who is willing to destroy your work in order to save it. So I have to agree with Miss Bowen on this one.
Yeah. Well, it's. I'm actually, it's funny because when we were just discussing it, so part of me is like, oh no, it's your art. But I do think To me, it speaks to perspective too, though. Like, I know how this process plays out, and I know that right now you're just fascinated with the idea that you can dip a brush in paint and transfer that to this paper, and you're like that. But later, it's going to dry, and we're all going to be looking at it, and you're not going to like it anymore because the fun of the painting is going to be over, and the reality is going to be that you're looking at a mess. So I reacted like, yep, she, you know, Ms. Bowen knows what she's doing. And I bet Ms. Bowen's parents also come in and they may not phrase it the way Roy did. I love these two just cursing up a storm, talking about little kids' paintings. But I'm sure the parents are like, yeah, no, if I got to look at something my kid did, I'd much rather it be something I can see.
Yeah. And also, I think that if you wanted to go color your fucking heart's delight out later, that's fine. If you are showing something to people, there is the aspect that it's going to be judged by the public, in which case you want somebody to sort of have your back and say, like, look, let's modify this a little bit because your actual point isn't coming through. Is this the most important thing to do with however old these kids are? What, like first or second grade? Probably not.
Right.
But I would also say, getting comfortable with the idea that other people can have input and edit you in a way that might be beneficial is not a thing we shouldn't be teaching children.
I like it.
I mean, it's also a question of perspective, because from the perspective of a first or second grader or whatever Phoebe is, you know, they're like, oh, I have a piece of paper and I have many colors of paint. I do not understand the concept of negative space. And therefore, if it's going to be a rainbow, right? And Miss Bowen snatches it once the rainbow's done, she hasn't let me color in the sky, the fields, the grass. You know what I mean? Like, if you're a kid, you're like, I need to fill the whole paper, and it's just going to get messier and messier. And yes, you don't have the perspective to know, oh yeah, this will be viewed and judged and that sort of thing. So yeah, I have no problem with it. It's funny. I don't think of it as editing, but I like that, boss. I just think it was like, that's just like a wily veteran. Like, you're done, snip. Like, well, you can see like the little kid's head turning as the thing is pulled away. You put a new piece of paper in front of them so they can finish, you know, paint their heart's delight.
Painting, but not on this piece of paper.
This one's good.
It's like, I can't remember which Matrix movie it was, other than not the first, where it's Neo fighting off like 50,000 Agent Smiths. And it's just after a while, just like a Rat King pile of AI bodies. Like, it's just fucking there. What are you doing? I needed somebody to come and be like, he should fight one guy. Have him fight maybe two, but we don't need 50,000. This is ridiculous.
It's funny you use that, example specifically, because I think that's one of the great examples of someone of the creator then having too much power. And you look back at the first one and go, oh, they made y'all shape this one. They made y'all, they didn't let y'all do whatever the fuck you wanted on this one. That's how we got to this brilliant piece of work. So yeah, the Matrix 2 and 3 were deeply disappointing for me, but at any rate.
That's where I got to jump in and correct you guys. Cause actually, there was only one Matrix movie, and I'm starting to think there's like a collective delusion on your part that you believe there was. I don't want to be a jerk about it. There was one, and I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, right. We're the rest, like, of what, 2, 3, right? What?
Yeah.
It almost sounds like there's some sort of higher power that's forcing all of us into an alternate reality where we don't remember that there wasn't those movies. That's really fucked up.
Listen, is it uncommon when you think about it? When you think what we know about entertainment, you have a breakout piece of entertainment and you find out that the first iteration of that breakout piece of entertainment was on rails a little bit, had a veteran who knew where the boundaries were. And then you have, second and third iterations of an amazing property. And you go, I don't know if it's as good as the first one. And you wonder, oh yeah, I found out that they took the It took the veteran out of the equation.
Yeah. Don't you start with me, Castleton.
I wouldn't be so surprised. You know, like this actually happened on one of my other favorite shows, Patriot. Which is like one is season one is you know a revelation, and then two you're like okay it's just straight okay like it approximates what you go what another one Future Man was another show season one unbelievable like way better than had any right to be you're like what how did this it's so stupid. But you're like, this is amazing. Like when you look at it, you're like, this is absolutely inspired. And then that one, though, I think they were just super high and they thought, oh, we'll never get a second and third season. So we don't have to think through that. And, you know, they're just stunned when that happened. So but it does happen. You know, the first one out of the gate is inspirational. In this case, we have Roy saying to Miss Bowen, so you're Miss Bowen. Yeah. Mean teacher. And boss, pick it up, please.
Well, Phoebe likes you. Well, she's smart. Most of them hate me. They have like different mean nicknames for me. And he says, go on. So, I don't know any of them. Miss Bowlegs, Miss Boring, Miss Bonehead, Miss Belland, Bodie, Miss Boatface, which I have to imagine is a shout out to Bodie McBoatface.
It's gotta be. Yeah. Bodie McBoatface.
Gotta be. Can't not be Bodie McBoatface. That was a bad idea to allow the internet to try.
Boss, explain what that is for people who don't know.
Oh, that Stephen Colbert, there was a contest to name. Is it a cruiser? I can't remember like exactly some, what kind of ship.
Yeah.
But,
right. It was some high end like military fucking, vessel. Yeah.
A big military ship. And I'm sure that there are people out there shouting about how it's an aircraft carrier or whatever it was. But there was an online contest. You could vote and decide which one of these historic admirals or whatever else it would be named after. And Stephen Colbert, during the Colbert Report, got his audience to all vote for write-in candidate, Bodie McBoatface.
And that's what won.
Mm-hmm.
Bodie
McBoatface. And that's what won. And then they wouldn't call it that because it's garbage. That's fine. Whatever. No USS Bodie McBoatface. So that we just have a British teacher version.
There you go. All right. So she's,
and then there's one little boy who simply calls me Fuck Witch. Which isn't bad. Sometimes.
She says it's admittedly my favorite, makes you like her. Quite a bit. But Fuck Witch is,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I read it as let's see, you know what? I didn't even look in the spelling of it. Fuck Witch. Okay. In the captioning, it says witch as in broom and hat, you know, a Halloween witch, not like sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like it's
could be both,
right? I always assumed it was like a evil witch, like a you know.
Yeah, that's the way I heard it. But yeah.
Fuck witch.
Mm-hmm. I have to say that is up there with my other favorite nickname, Boner Weenie.
I'm sorry.
There's a guy that went to high school with one of my best friends and the boyfriend, and I don't know what his real name is, but I do know of him as Boner Weenie, and everybody, if we are 40. And people refer to him as Boner Weenie.
That's awesome. Whatever the story is.
Chuffed about that.
Sure.
I don't think that there's even a story. I think that one time somebody was like, oh, this Boner. And then it just became like, I think that they like him. I don't know. I'm not sure if I've met him, but I know of Boner Weenie. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Real mature nickname too.
She says, admittedly, that one's my favorite. He says the best teachers are the toughest ones. I mean, Roy is enjoying the hell out of this. And mm-hmm. You gotta like a teacher who knows all the shitty names the kids call her and the worst one is her favorite. Like she's very winning. There's just something incredibly magnetic about Miss Ball.
I thought they did a brilliant job with this in that I'll call it Disney movie version of this, right? Any other person who would cross Roy's radar, we would hate for some reason. They'd be, you know, rich and obnoxious, or they'd be this or they'd be that. And to have Ms. Bowen be so very likable, like, this has meet cute written all over it, except that we're like, but Keely, like, if there's no Keely, this is a, like, oh, this is wonderful. Will the two of them live happily ever after now, after they've, you know, cursed at each other and both enjoyed it? So I thought it was I thought it was done in a fun way.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the defining characteristics of Roy Kent is him growling at everyone. And, you know, the other teacher had the effect on him where he just dismissed her and got the fuck away as fast as possible. And for whatever reason, he's having a real conversation with this person, you know, whatever the case may be. You know what I mean? It's just kismet. Yeah. You know, why is this working when other people don't? He growls at little kids outside stadiums. He growls at old men. He growls at groups of people. He doesn't give a shit. Like, leave me the fuck alone. But for some reason, her shtick is endearing to him, because it resonates as so authentic. And also, she's like a teacher of little kids. Her job is a tough cookie. You know, to have to, they're a real sharp cookie there, Coach. So yeah, my first coach used to chase me around the pitch on a motorbike. Roy says, like we were in fucking Mad Max, and Ms. Bowen says, that's terrifying. And what does he say here, Coach?
Yeah, but it made me fast, which is, I mean, wow. You know, like, every once in a while I get something and I'm concerned at the level on which I get it. Like, there's part of me that goes, yeah, well, you know, guy's fast. He's Roy Kent now. Like, I'm not sure that means it's okay to chase a little kid with a motorbike, but I guess we all just move on.
Isn't there some stat about successful people with terrible dads? Isn't there some
stat? I feel like about I've that? Read something. I don't know if it's like a statistic, but I've read that a lot of people, you know, a lot of the sort of mega star people we would be aware of had very interesting relationships with their fathers. Yeah.
I'm gonna come at it from another angle and wonder how many times people just have bad dads. How often is it that the population?
That's a good point. You're like, if you have enough bad dads out there, then some of them are gonna give you a sting, and some of them are gonna give you Hank the leg breaker from the docks. Yeah. Okay.
It's a little bit like, you wouldn't believe how many CEOs are right-handed. It's like, well, that's a lot. That's most. It's most are right-handed. I don't know what to tell you. What I thought about more was Tina Fey on Weekend Update a few years back, when somebody said that Hillary Clinton was a bitch. She was like, yeah, she is a bitch. And so am I. And so is this one. And points at Amy Poehler. And the line is, bitches get stuff done. That's why Catholic schools use nuns as teachers and not priests. Those nuns are mean old clams, and they sleep on cots, and they're allowed to hit you. And at the end of the school year, you hated those bitches and you knew the capital of Vermont. Now, was that sort of an endorsement of Hillary Clinton over Barack Obama, and we maybe need to revisit that slightly? Yes, but also she is correct. All those things are accurate.
I ask myself about that kind of stuff all the time. Like, perfect example, Joe Jackson, right? Like, any measure, what a fucking nightmare. And then you go, and I feel uncomfortable, but the reality is the reality. Like, the world got the Jackson 5, and if he hadn't been an asshole, those dance moves wouldn't have been that precise. I mean, like, it's crazy. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know what to do with that sometimes.
Yeah, maybe we never have access to the counterpoint either. Because, like, the bakeoid, like, low-key parent who has a successful kid is like, great, like super. You're like, you don't hear those stories. Right. Good for you, man. Like, your mom and I are going to just toke one up before, like, all right, like, shit. You never hear that. That one doesn't end up in an Oliver Stone film. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so her half hour countdown begins, and he's got to go. Nothing worse than parents' mixers. They get free Chardonnay, and I get to ward off all the single dads. And not so single dads.
Oof.
That's
so gross.
Like, don't be that really, guy.
In parent teacher conference, really? Knock
gross.
It off.
Gross. Gross. Yeah, just don't be that. Like have a couple rules, and one of them should be like, just don't be that.
Don't
guy.
Hit on your kid's teacher. I think that's fair.
Should be just. A
I think we can all follow that one. No.
My God.
I understand that this is going to shock you guys a lot because I am the moral guidestone of this podcast, obviously. But the problem with that for me is not just the cheating, but the cheating so close to home that you are asking to get caught.
That's a great point.
I'm not saying that people who have second families on the other side of the country are doing it better. What I'm saying is, if you take care to make sure that your partner never, ever, ever finds out about that one time you fucked up, you are doing way better than the person who will play grab ass with your sister-in-law. That's a fucking problem.
We had a funny conversation in our family the other day. We had a funny conversation because we were talking about my daughter at college, and there was this one guy that she's friends with who's like just really outgoing, and she couldn't get a read on him. She's like, he's got a girlfriend, but I sometimes feel like he might be flirting with me, but he's just like that with everybody. And so like, I can't. And Juliana said, like, your dad? And I was like, wait, what? I was like, hang on. What? Like, what?
I'm saying it.
Yeah, like, and they were like, oh yeah, no. Like there is a version. I love people. And so there is a version of me where you could say, yeah, he flirts with everybody. Like Juliana's like, there is a, you know, it is, you are an equal opportunity flirter only because you're so enthralled with everybody. Like you'll meet just somebody on the street and we're walking to a thing. Can you not talk to the person you just, you know, like, you know,
interesting.
Keep it moving. And it's like, and she's like, if in the wrong hands, it could be it's not flirting, but she's like, it could be misconstrued really get very engaged one-on-one. It's never like group. It's never a group thing. It's like, you know, you meet someone and you have that like very, very intense sort of focus. Mm-hmm, she's like, could be just like that. I was like, oh, that's interesting. But I make sure to go out of my way to, you know, never, not with, you know, you don't want to be like that with, you know, kids, teachers or you know, like make sure I always go like, super far out of my way to make sure like it could not be misconstrued, you know, that whatever. It's just, you know,
yeah.
But it is, it was funny to hear it, you know, related back to me. I'm like, wait a second. Like,
that's funny.
But yeah, no, it's interesting. She asked him, are you married? And
he answers.
This is kind of like, I was trying to think, is this the first time she asks about him?
I
was
like, so.
They've been going back with the bat. You have the birdie going over badminton back and forth. I got, you know, I do this. Like they're offering, but I don't think it's been formatted as a question between them. Right. And then at least in this interaction,
I think that's right. I mean,
that's kind of the first like foray for her in a way. I don't know.
It's interesting because I read it. I don't think I'm wrong based on overall what happens here, but I read it as her saying, but wouldn't so much mind being hit on by a single uncle. And I also then thought, how many of those single dads think they got that signal, but they just were being told about the kids' art and they just read it wrong. You know what I mean? Because she doesn't say here, hey there, good looking. I find you interesting, but it certainly comes through.
You know, it's a trick to capture that. You know, anytime I'm always amazed because you know when you see a show and you go, God, these people have no chemistry? Like, how did this get past?
Right.
Right?
Right.
so that when you see people with chemistry, like these people actually have chemistry, like this works.
Yeah. Yeah. If you it told me like, oh, in real life they're married, I'd be like, that explains it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I've been trying to get people to watch more people to watch a brilliant. I just love this show. Excellent Australian show called Colin from Accounts. And you watch it and you're like, man, there is chemistry up the wazoo between these two, you know, the two leads. You're like, God damn. Like they just, and then you're like, oh, they're married and they wrote it together. And you're like, okay, all right. Like, yes, that explains. But right. Exactly right, coach. Like if you said, oh, these guys were dating outside, like, cause there's something cooking here. But capturing it is a trick. It is an accomplishment.
For
Boss,
sure.
You got something?
No, it's just that I looked up Colin from Accounts and the lead, Patrick Bramble. Yep. I'm not sure if I'm Patrick pronouncing that correct. Yeah, no, he is the husband on the TV show Evil that I watch and fucking love.
Oh, no shit. Oh, Boss, you're going to like this. You're going to really like it. So he's very talented. He created the Colin from Accounts show. It's just got picked up for a second season, thank God. It's like one of those things where little engine that could. Those of us who love that show are very, very excited about it.
I'm going to have to give it a try. I will let you know that he, even though being the husband is not actually the romantic lead, because there's there's a large segment of the audience that wants the female lead to get together with the hot priest who she works with. Mike Coulter from...
Everybody in the world should get together with Michael. I should get together with Michael. Michael Coulter is stunningly beautiful.
It's fucking
he
ridiculous.
Is so and he so handsome. It is offensive. Mm-hmm. Michael Coulter should get mm-hmm. punched in the stomach by me.
It wouldn't matter, though. He wouldn't feel
he wouldn't feel it. He's got,
you would hurt your hands.
Unbelievable. Hand. I'm like, how? Like, are you created in a lab?
He's so hot, and they're like, let's make you a priest and make you just have to like shove all of that attractiveness inside of your priest uniform and see what you could do with that. And he fucking does.
Mike Coulter is handsome enough that you could put him in an elevator with Idris, and he might still hold your gaze. You know, it's like that. You go, you know, you're just like, do you know who Mike Coulter is, coach? Coach
I do.
Is laughing.
Oh, you I do. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I know who it is.
What a jerk, Mike Coulter.
Just in case the audience isn't sure, though, he played Luke Cage, both on the Luke Cage TV show and also in Jessica Jones. Extremely good looking.
I never made it all the way through. It was another one of those series that I started, was like, this is great, and then somehow didn't complete. But every episode of it I watched, I loved.
What are you talking about?
Luke Cage.
Oh, yeah.
I liked it. Really? I really liked it when I watched.
I'm not going to say, yeah. I think Mike Coulter's you know brings a lot to the table, but in that you know certain roles are better for him than others. That's all. You know, like I didn't love the I don't know Luke Cage. Boss, did you like Luke Cage?
I did at first. I didn't finish most of the Marvel TV shows. I sort of like after a little even Daredevil after a bit I dropped off.
Yeah.
So I think that's more of the. I think each one of those should be like one, maybe two seasons and then done. There's not a lot to do after you talk about their big story. Like Jessica Jones and Kilgrave, fucking amazing. Everything after that, I don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, David Tennant, you know, again, there's certain shows where you go, oh, whatever, we got to stay on Ted Lasso, but certain shows where you're like, you know, somebody just absorb, you know, this is the problem I'm having with Abbott. I love Abbott Elementary, but like whenever Ava's not on screen, Principal Ava, I'm like one tier less interested somehow, because I guess, I don't know why, but I'm like, that comedy is so, so good for me that when she's not on, and it's like David Tennant's not on Jessica Jones. I'm like, okay.
You don't want to hear Barbara shouting Sweet Baby Jesus in the grown one too. Because that is one of the lines from the TV show that I roared with laughter.
That was so
like it
funny.
Actually did surprise me.
No, that was very fun. I remember that line actually. That was very
Sweet Baby Jesus and the grown one too.
That's really funny. Okay. All right. So we have her inquiring here, Miss Bowen. Are you married? He says no, and she doesn't look up. She's very casual about it. She's pretty slick. Miss Bowen, she's just packing her stuff, and then his phone rings, And he looks at it. Reminders leave for photo shoot. I got to go. She says, you're not going to stay for the art show? No, sorry. And then he pulls out, what is that, 100 quid?
It looks like 100.
Like my, my use of quid there.
At least 80, but maybe it felt like 100 got dropped.
Four or five bills, right? And grabs the the breast pictures and leaves. And he doesn't, he's not, there's not a big goodbye here, Coach. You notice that?
Oh, yeah, no. He rushes out. He's like, my head was in one place. I've just been reminded that my head was supposed to be in a different place. I got to go. This was much more I'm out of here than, you know, oh, I forgot I have an appointment. Like, he was like, I should go now before this conversation takes any more questionable turns.
He waves over his shoulder without looking back.
Yeah, I mean, he really gets out of it. I'm curious, and maybe this seemed obvious to you too. It felt to me like Phoebe drew a specific pair of breasts, as in Ms. Bowen's. Was that, did that?
Oh.
Because I was like, wait, what? Like, I don't know. Yeah. So maybe not. Maybe just, you know.
I will say that when he was going through the photos, they all looked the same, but there's, I would have to imagine, had she seen breasts that many times in order to draw them that accurately, it would have to be her mom's.
You would almost think, like, that's an interesting point.
Otherwise, she has an incredible imagination and could really pinpoint exactly where Miss Bowen's nipples are going to end up, because those were accurate.
Yeah. You know what? Okay. Yeah. No, I'm with you. At the very least, it would be informed by something she had seen, in which case mom is much more.
Right, yes.
Yes, yes.
Now, you know, you talk about people who are like body part people, say, oh, I'm a leg woman, or I'm a, you know, I have a friend and she's a forearm girl. Like, she'd love, so she likes guys that pick up trash cans for a living, like garbage, because they have the best forearms. She's like, oh my God. You know, so everybody's.
The sluttiest thing a man could do is wear a dress shirt with his sleeves rolled up past his forearms. So slutty.
Really?
So slutty. Really?
Look at Coach and I are both what? Like, we're like,
have you?
Oh, I had no, I don't know that I've ever heard this before in my life. I'm fascinated.
Have you not seen Stanley Tucci make a cocktail on his cooking show? Because he only wears button-down dress shirts with the sleeves rolled up. And, like, he's shaking shit. It's all over the place. Come on.
Well, I point this out because I it did not occur to me whose breasts Phoebe had drawn, because I'm not a boob man. But we do have someone on the podcast who might be categorized that way, which is why their mind may have gone to that. Yeah, is it?
Oh, I love boobs.
Yes.
Obviously, you must be talking about you then. Anyway, so next scene, what happens is...
So actually, what does happen is the crazy teacher, Karen, with the lollipops comes in. She goes, ooh, like she was obviously overhearing the interaction. And, you know, it's not often you get to see Fuckwitch take off her mask and you know, and put her jammies on. And she was definitely, you know, it seemed like she was working it a little bit. And this is where, if you love Boss, you're probably going to love Miss Bowen. Boss, I'll let you do Miss Bowen's line to her colleague here.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Karen, grow up. Grow the fuck up, I should say. For God's sake, grow the fuck up.
It's so...
Which... I have to agree that I think there is a difference between being childlike when you're working with kids and being immature. And it seems like Karen was being intentionally immature. Like, even if Miss Bowen was flirting with Roy, what you don't do is come over and go, ooh, like you're in the audience of fucking Saved by the Bell. Like, you come over and say, well, he's hot. So, like, what's up?
Yeah. It certainly she does. It seems that Karen does, and it's funny that her name's Karen. It just hit me. But anyway, it seems that Karen does what Karen does, and it doesn't really matter what she's getting from the other person. And what was actually pretty hot between Roy and Bowen is that they both were picking up on the other, right? And so it's like, ooh, okay, now we're playing a game. Like, there's no badminton with Karen. Like, she's just sort of swinging away, whatever
happens. No, she's bowling. She's just throwing her shit all around, hoping that she hits some pins and somebody connects with it. But, like, she's not paying attention to what's going on.
All right, Coach. We pivot over from a hot and heavy scene to and it wasn't really hot and heavy, but it was charming and likable, and, and anytime you see some human connection, that is prime Ted Lasso territory. So we pivot over to Ted waiting outside of a fence, like a wrought iron grated spike top fence, all by his lonesome. Very much alone. I don't think it's an accident that the first shot, the establishing shot, is hit a single of him with a barrier behind him. Coach, walk us through the scene, please.
So Ted looks up. Here comes Dr. Sharon on the bike. I'm assuming the bike he gifted her, actually. And he says, well, look what the weird bike rode in, which he's all over the place because he's upset, I guess. Ted, how long have you been standing out here? A long time. And I really got to use the John, too. But I'm going to hold it a bit longer because I'm so dang ticked off at you. I mean, wow. And so we cut inside. I was right. It's a lot easier to navigate that hallway with this thing all folded up. If you recall, last he brought a bike in there. It was in disrepair and not able to be folded. She chuckles, thank you for carrying it up. And he confronts her, how could you just leave? Sorry, I'm not good with goodbyes. He says, well, when I was a baby, I wasn't good at walking and talking, but I stuck with it and look at me now. I do need to pause here. I laughed out the fuck loud at that line. I thought that, like, as someone who has had an angry moment or two, There's a specific like wavelength of anger that makes you super eloquent, like makes you able to put together ideas in a very specific way of like, this is exactly the bullshit I'm talking about. And to me, for him, that line was so funny and so frustrated and so angry. Like, it just made me laugh. Anyway.
Wait, do you have that superpower when you're that angry? You can
sometimes. Sometimes I say things that even I am like, that was objectively funny. Like, that was a funny...
This may be why I don't give into anger very much, because my version is just, like, profanity and a lot of finger-pointing. So that's good. That's good, Coach.
Well, I have that.
It's good that you can clear that up. That's really nice.
I have that gear. But, yeah, I definitely have times where... Because I actually had a friend tell me that once, that when I would go off, he was like, the thing is, sometimes when you go off is when you make all the sense, but because you're yelling, people can't hear you. He was like, actually, you go off. He's like, when you go off, like, oftentimes, like, you are spot on. Like, he's like, you call exactly what's going on, but because you're yelling.
Actually, that's a very good, as your friend, I will say that that's a very good observation. Yeah, that works. Yeah, that's interesting. I also, for the record, I thought this was great. I laughed at that. And look at me now.
Like, look at me now. Like,
yeah. I was like, god damn. That's pretty good.
He's funny. So yes, did you get my letter? Yes. Did you read it? No. We had a whole thing planned for you. You know how hard it is to get grown men to learn choreography? I thought that was nice. Almost impossible. Heck, we even got you a gift. He throws the envelope on the table. Cash comes spilling out. Spoiler alert, it's a bunch of cash. He thanks him. He says, you're welcome. But Ted, you knew I was leaving. I did, but I thought I was going to get a chance to say goodbye to you. I really felt that. I have my own goodbye shit, I guess. But I was like, yeah, come on, Sharon.
Right.
I mean, my wife left
me. Hold on. But we're sweethearts. let's pivot over to the person on the other side of the podcast here. Boss, do you have any goodbye issues? Or are you just like, do you usually just kiss your middle finger and hold it in the breeze? Or like, how does it typically work with you, boss?
I can't believe that you would say that I'm not a sweetheart. That's fucking ridiculous. I don't have a problem with goodbyes, but also I don't necessarily need them. I think also there's a little bit of, you can get a hold of anybody now that you kind of want to. Like, you could figure out a way if it really were that important. Right. So basically, if I don't talk to you right now, it's because I don't feel like it. So in that case, it doesn't feel as inevitable. Like, I think I've gotten better with change, in part because it's easier to accept those things now. I would like to say, as much as you guys laughed at the line about, but look at me now, I sort of like that what he was saying was, sometimes you have to work hard at shit. Like, sometimes it sucks, but then you have to work hard at
shit. Yeah, no, that's, I love, that's part of what made me laugh,
Yeah,
for sure.
You're not good at doing goodbyes. You have to do them. That's how you get better.
Yeah.
Gotta fucking practice.
It's funny coming out of Ted's mouth that right, in this, well, that maybe that's an indication that therapy has really worked.
Maybe.
Voss, you'll be happy to know, we're joking around about how your lack of,
sentimentality.
Yeah, that's exactly the word I was looking for. Juliana, volunteered for something at the kids' school, and I told her, I was like, do not do that. She's like, no, I think it'll be, they set all the kids up with a sponsor, all the seniors in high school, and somebody's got to coordinate it. So there's like a 3-person group coordinating it. And I was like, don't do that. Like, don't be one of the 3 people. I've seen it for years. It's a train wreck. And anyway, it was her. And then, this one other woman who's a college professor, and it's being run. They're the assistants, and it's being run by a woman with like worse ADHD than me and Coach put together. So the meeting, I know, look, Eva was just shaking her head. The meeting is like it's Juliana at the table on her laptop, like just sort of like nodding and agreeing. And the other woman who's the professor texting Juliana saying like, can we just use a spreadsheet and move on? Like, what are we like, what's how, you know, like this, like all this stuff. And then me watching Juliana and laughing, thinking, oh my God, like she has it at home. Why, like, why would you sign up for, but the meeting was 1 hour and 10 minutes, and it could have been an email. And so, Jesus Christ. I told her your thing about like, what's the rule? It's like, I don't want a meeting that could have been an email, and don't send me an email that should have been a text. And also generally don't text me.
just by and large.
Like
if you don't have
like
to.
How you reduce it down to as little interaction as possible. Make it granular for me. Give me the
just as small as possible.
Gleaming details and let's not interact. How about that?
I'll say what you need, what Juliana needs in that meeting is the boyfriend, because it turns out he was complaining that he's been in a lot of meetings recently. And he's like, half the time, it doesn't even have anything to do with me. Like, I've got nothing to do with the fucking meeting. Why am I involved in the meeting? He found out it's because, especially like department heads, found out that he was the guy in the meeting that was like, that's not on the agenda. So we're going to move on to the next topic. We're going to stop talking about this and we're going to get back to what this meeting is for. So he is the company's professional taskmaster. He's like, that's not awesome. Nobody included this when you sent out an email. So we're going to schedule a different meeting and you guys could talk about that later. That's not for this one.
Wow.
I've never been prouder of him.
No, that's
great. I'm so happy.
That's great. Cause it's funny. I am so for that. And it's actually in part because of my ADHD. Like actually once we decide like this is what we're doing, then I'm like, come on, stick to that, man. Because if we start wandering around, anyone who's listened to this podcast more than 15 minutes knows, I'll goddamn wander on it. So like, I'm trying to stay on the road. Don't be leading me off the road now. I'm doing my best here. Like, don't do that.
Squirrel.
Exactly. Like, don't be pointing out squirrels. Like, I'm working at this.
Man. The date night with you and the boyfriend must be a very targeted affair, boss. I can only imagine. Not a lot of
targeted.
What are we doing this evening? Mm-hmm. We're gonna watch this show and then we're gonna go to bed. Okay, done. Mm-hmm. Bam. That's it.
Yeah. Have I not mentioned what Valentine's Day is?
Are there margaritas on the schedule?
Wait, have you? Because if you haven't, I need you to.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Valentine's Day, our tradition: beef stroganoff, the first John Wick. Not on the rest of the John Wicks. John Wick number one, beef stroganoff. That's Thanksgiving. That's Valentine's Day.
I'm guessing y'all luggage a lot of just like, matched right up, don't it?
That's it. That's it.
Jesus, what John Wick, as one does
on Valentine's Day, stroganoff for the belly of Eastern European meat.
Oh man, it's fucking phenomenal! You know it's so that's good.
Awesome. Yeah, beef stroganoff is unbelievable. Yeah, I'll give you that. Well, listen, this is I asked this because so boss doesn't have hangups with goodbyes because she's like I could get a hold of you. There's Facebook. There's other ways to do it. But Ted, for Ted, this is a big deal. This is someone who's really been life changing for him. It's so funny. We went past it really quickly, but he throws, spoiler alert, it's a bunch of cash. And she says, thank you. Like, I really like her. You know, I've had problems with Dr. Sharon, mm-hmm. the door closing and certain mm-hmm. things, but like, I mm-hmm. really like how calm she is. And like, even in this moment, she really does understand what's behind it and that, you know, she's able to see the forest for the trees. And
also, yeah, it feels to me like, this is what she needed, but when someone's your therapist, like they're also colleagues. Like he's come here to speak to his therapist, and she was saying goodbye to colleagues in a way. You know what I'm saying? Like, because my therapist, like,
yes, right.
My therapist doesn't get not really, but you know, in terms of like my experience of it, it's like my therapist doesn't get to have like an inner world or a bad day. Like if I'm coaching somebody, I'm not like, oh, my wife's been on my ass all week. Like, you know what I mean? Like so? Like, they don't give a fuck. Like, they came for coaching. They didn't. Good for you. And so there's
you
a
don't
level
start
on
that
which
way. You don't start your sessions that way, coach?
No.
Oh, generally. Sorry. If you detect something, it's cut my leg real bad. I'm imminently bleeding.
Here's a list of shit that's been bothering me.
It's not you. If you just go ahead and tell me your bullshit, and I'll just add it to the pile.
You know, but yeah, I mean, for him, like that's it. You know, it actually has a bit of in it, which I hadn't thought of, but I think is worth thinking about. Is it's got a little mother child to it, because this is how we are with our parents, right? With our parents, it's not like somebody said one of the craziest things about growing up is realizing that your parents were growing up too, and I was like, okay, now I need a nap. Because, yeah. Because that's probably the most shocking part of being a parent for me is I thought it was all sorted out by now. The fact that I am still sorting things out at this point in my life is totally fucking shocking to me. I thought, I don't know when, 35 or so, like whatever you didn't have figured out, they gave you like a memo, like there's the rest of the shit, go mm-hmm, live the rest mm-hmm. of your life. So it's shocking to me. And so I think Ted, like, the fact that she doesn't do well with goodbyes is, why doesn't she do well with goodbyes? Ted don't know. Ted don't care. And it's appropriate in a way for him not to care based on the relationship they have, you know? So it's interesting.
Absolutely. I thought I was going to get a chance to say goodbye to you, he says. And, I mean, my wife left me, my dad left me, and you more than anyone in the world knows how I feel when I get abandoned.
And you just left. Oof.
I understand where he's coming from with that. But also, I would need to call him on projecting his own shit onto Dr. Sharon. Like, number one, your wife didn't up and leave you without a goodbye. You and your wife had a conversation about how you were going to separate. And then you left and moved to another country. And then she came and visited you. And you guys discussed how you were going to get divorced. And then you did the whole divorce and you still are in each other's lives. So like what he is talking about is his emotional reaction to not having the same relationship anymore. And she needs him to be good at that in order for her to have done her job correctly.
Why are you a Michelle?
This is also another thing.
That's mostly what I'm trying to figure out.
I mean, obviously she's right about everything. I understand what he is saying and how he is feeling, but I also think that's one of the things you need to work at in therapy. Like, him feeling that way doesn't justify other people needing to change their actions to fit his emotions.
I'm stunned by that take, boss, but yes.
I figured.
Yeah, I can't believe that's coming out of you. So she says, yes, I read the letter. I wrote about that. It's all in the letter I left for you. Wait a minute. Yeah. Okay. You mean this? This right here? Okay. Guess what? I'm not going to read your letter ever. Okay. You got something you want to say to me? You just say it to my face.
The way she looks at him, what I read there is, oh, wow, I really hurt you. Like, I think she thought, you'll read the letter, you'll get it, and we'll be fine. And I think she's seeing, like, oh, I really, really hurt somebody's feelings. This is not how this was supposed to play out. And I thought it was a really nuanced moment, because she didn't say a word, but it didn't read like, why are you yelling at me? It read like, ooh, I know why you're yelling at me. You are really hurt. Sorry. Moment from Dr. Sharon.
She clearly took the time to think about this and think about through with all of her patients or clients or whatever they call it. And it seems like it didn't occur to her that they might not get to the letter reading portion of the event, you know, like,
right.
So they kind of just skip past that.
Do you think you would have read it, Coach? I'm just curious. I think I would have read the letter even if I had read it angry. I think it is interesting that Ted's like, nope. Like, it's a little bit like not going to his father's funeral in the like, fine, you quit on me, I quit on you.
Yep. Yep.
Right. It's very reactive. And anytime someone uses like always, never, you know, I'm not going to read ever, you know, right, that's an emotional reaction. We're dealing with something else. And you know, he says, I thought we had a breakthrough, and you know, Dr. Sharon, yeah, she says, it's this moment. She says, yeah, you did. You confronted things. He says, no, not me. I'm talking about us. So, which is another thing, which is, I really like, I think it was you, Coach, that said that it was like a father, a parent child thing. It does have that sort of petulant child energy about it. Because one of the people is being very calm and understanding and, you know, de-escalating the event. And she agrees. We did, Ted. Yeah. Thanks to you, I've learned that expressing my vulnerabilities can help my patients with theirs. You helped me become a better therapist, which is, that's saying something, because I was already fucking brilliant, which I was going to say.
I love that.
Yeah. It goes back to how good at your job, because I'm 3 times better at mine or whatever. Damn, Jesus Christ. And then that makes him laugh. That like takes a little bit of the edge off the situation, right, Coach?
And I think in part, this is really interesting. It's making me think of a situation, but it really is actually making me think of like a situation that never got resolved. Like, we never got to any version of this conversation. So on occasion, it bubbles up on me. So it's interesting to think about. But she acknowledges us. She acknowledges, oh no, something special did transpire. And I think that makes him go, okay, then we're on our road back. Like, a minute ago, I thought I meant nothing to you, or I felt that you treated me like I meant nothing to you. And that was the problem. But the minute she acknowledges, no, you're not crazy, something special happened here, it feels to me like when he starts to actually turn. I think that matters. I think part of his deal with his dad is like, you didn't think about me, which we've had the whole conversation and you know, boss has walked us through like the realities of that. But I think that sense of like, oh man, you didn't think about me. Like you didn't, I didn't matter enough. And now it's like, no, you mattered a lot. And I think he can hear the rest.
She's validating his, he's sitting there thinking, oh, this, we didn't have this. And she said, no, we did have this, which is why I wrote the letter. You'll see that when you're, go ahead, boss.
What it sort of reminded me about a little bit was the movie My Girl with Macaulay Culkin and Anna Chomsky. She has a crush on her teacher, who was played by Griffin Dunn, who is the lead in After Hours, which Beard After Hours, paid an homage to. And the Mr. Bixler really likes her. Like, he does think that Veda is like a cool kid. And when she comes to his house and is like, I'm in love with you, Mr. Bixler, he's like, oh, honey, no, like, you don't understand what's happening here. Like, it's not so much a parent thing for me as Ted is expecting a deeper relationship with Dr. Sharon. And she's like, honey, I'm your therapist. Like, yeah. I care about you as much as I can as a therapist cares about the patient. But there needs to be a distance between us because I am getting into your brain and moving shit around. And so if I thought of you as a friend or, God fucking forbid, a lover of some sort, God, I hate it that I say that word. But if she does not take her relationship in her role in that relationship very seriously, then she could really fuck him up. So like there's, it is almost a, she is keeping her distance in order to protect him from making it worse. Obviously, because he's already so super fucking pissed that she tried to leave without saying goodbye to him.
Yeah. I mean, luckily, no one in this universe would be so unethical as to create an inappropriate relationship with someone who had been under their care. So we don't have to worry about that.
No, that is true.
That's a good point.
Well, that's nice of you to say, he says after he chuckles. And yet, we're going to leave without telling me. You're going to leave without telling me you know any of that? Ted, it's all in the letter. It's in the letter. All right. Well, fine. I'll read your stupid ass letter. Unbelievable.
I laugh so. I don't know why. I think it just is telling me what a child I can be because this whole. I just thought his anger here is so. You know what it is? It's a bit of a sidestep, but. Early on in my stand-up, I may have told you guys this before, so I'll be quick. But early in my stand-up, I like comics like Lewis Black, and I like that like crazy ranting, yelling. I wanted to do that. I wanted to do some of that. And what I found was I am way too big and way too black to be screaming at an audience. Like, that's just not, absolutely the fuck not. Like, they're just horrified and scared and think I'm going to kill them all. So what I then learned to do was twist it to frustration. And people fucking loved me frustrated. Pissed, not so much. But frustrated, loved it. And to me, that's what's here is he's so, like, thwarted. Like, he has no power here, but he's trying to, like, I'm a big boy, listen to me. And I just, it's like, every moment of it cracks me up.
Yeah, he's throwing a full-on
tantrum. Right? I mean, he is throwing a tantrum. Right, I'll read your stupid ass letter. Like, what? Like, what is happening right now?
Yeah. Which is, I would say, in a lot of ways, better than a panic attack, but still something he needs to work on.
That's a really good point. Yeah. It's interesting. That. It's like we're watching the progress. Like, so yeah, he couldn't even himself really face it, certainly not let it out. Now he's letting it out totally inappropriately. That's interesting,
I was going to say that Dr. Sharon, so if we could chart this, if we could make a chart of the emotions in this scene, Dr. Sharon is like even keeled the entire time, and Ted goes all the way up and then comes all the way down. And she's like an old ship captain who's like, I see that wave that's coming. I know how to just all we have to do is turn right 45 degrees. You know, or starboard, if she's a captain, and you know what I mean, that kind of thing. And you're like, and then we'll get over the wave, like, and they're smooth sailing after that. And she just knows. She's just like a wily veteran, and you know, she literally rides the wave of his emotion to its conclusion. So, Coach Ted, He reads the letter in front of her and, mm-hmm. and walk
you,
us through.
You spell favorite wrong. Like another laugh line for me. I was like, wow, you are really just, you are just, I mean, wow. And then, so he's muttering, reading it. He's, and you can see that the letter is a lot more than he ever could have imagined because his face totally turns. It's a great piece of acting. And honestly, I loved that for all the things we get to see in this show, this was another moment they chose that, like, that letter is between them. The rest of us can mind our fucking business. I totally appreciated that. Very good letter. And then she says to him, I feel more comfortable writing goodbye than saying it. I'm sorry. Which I've shared my thought that apologies and giving forgiveness are both just ways of saying I love you. So I thought that was cool. It's okay. I understand. My train to Royston doesn't leave till midnight. Want to grab a drink? She signals the cash that just went flying across her table. I'm buying. Yeah, okay, that'd be nice, yeah. But I really gotta pee first, I gotta, and then so she directs him to the door on her left and sort of sighs because she has befriended a crazy person. but I, yeah, this is one of my favorite scenes of the series.
Really?
Yeah. I just thought, like,
really?
He's so vulnerable, she's so good to him in this moment, but, like, still, like, maintains, like, yeah, I wrote you a letter, dude. Like, get a hold of you. Like, there's a bit of get a hold of yourself built into it that I appreciate. It's not just her going, you're right, I abandoned you. She didn't abandon him. Like, he may feel abandoned, like Boss points out, but she did not abandon him. And so, I thought it was well, I don't know. I just really enjoyed it.
Well, and I think that this also goes back to the earlier conversation about the teacher Karen and Roy in the hallway and how much she was wanting him to emotionally invest in her. Or maybe not even emotionally, but like, right. Give me your attention, yes. And energy and pay attention. Do it this way. Ted feels like he has not an entitlement, but that he deserves a goodbye. Dr. Sharon tries to give him one that she feels comfortable with, but he feels like that's not good enough. So he needs to ask for more. I think I really like that she says, like, actually, I did everything I need to do in this letter, and I would like you to read it for me. Like, what I did was write it. What you need to do is read it, and then we could figure out from there. But he was reacting from an emotional place because he felt abandoned and felt hurt and also felt that the proper way to do a goodbye is similar. The same way that you do a proper hello, which is that you do a song and dance. And you get people to join in on the celebration and you make a big deal. And that is the proper way to send somebody off. And what she's saying is, I would rather, in college, I had a buddy who would pull a pocket. His nickname was Pocket, doesn't matter. And that is where he would tell one person, I'm leaving, and then just take off. And so everybody else at the party would know that he's fine, that he went home. But he's not going to do this whole fucking thing where he walks around to everybody at the goddamn party, tells them that he's leaving. It's one, and then he's gone. I understand and respect where Dr. Sharon was coming from with this. Like, I wrote you a letter. I explained my feelings. This is all we need.
Yeah, it's really good. It's funny. I was. It's crazy when you see actors that you have grown to love in the wild. I was watching the British series Trying, which was a 2020 series, and you see Sarah Niles, who plays Dr. Sharon in the series, and she's so different. And you're like, you know, she's an actor. Of course she's different. But you're just like, oh, my God. Like, it's just such a different gear for her. But you know, we talk a lot about acting on this podcast and your partners, your performance and all this other stuff. And the presence, like what she does. We talk a lot about how they are able to pull off on Ted Lasso certain types of scenes that are not readily pulled off by other shows. They do a lot of no-nos, one person talking into a phone when the other person's there without a split screen. That should mm-hmm. never work. It always works on this show. Mm-hmm. Reading a letter where we don't know the contents,
yeah.
and we're just supposed to trust the actor's face is a high bar for an audience and an incredibly high bar for an actor. But he kills it. And he is so supported by her because she kills it too. Like,
yeah.
Look, even she just lowers her chin, her eye, her, you know, what she does with her eyes. I'm like, damn, this is like a clinic that you show to young actors and say, look, there's no dialogue in this scene. This is silent, you know? And did you get anything from this? Is there acting going on here? And people go, Jesus Christ. So the definition of acting isn't just, long soliloquies. And it is those quiet moments that resonate with humans because we can recognize them when we see them. So it's a beautiful moment and incredibly well done. And now we pivot over to
Coach.
Yeah, go ahead,
Coach. We can move. I just want to use a word that I think really matters in terms of the characters in that world, but I think also matters in our experience of the show overall. And we've talked about, you know, second and third season versus first season, all that. But I think we'd agree that what you just described is true throughout, if not in every scene of every episode, is like over the life of the show. And I think the trust is part of the experience, like that I feel like I am in good hands. I don't, and I feel like the show knows we're in good hands, right? So you can write a scene that doesn't have that dialogue because Sudeikis is going to read the letter and we're going to see it on his face. And you see it throughout. I think they do it with pretty much every character has moments where you're like, you know, it's Jamie saying, I should move away and trust my teammate to know the right thing. And we just sit there and watch the Rubik's Cube get solved in Roy's head. And he yells, fuck. And does anybody have any question watching that? Like, what he just understood and where he's now going to, like, it's brilliant. So trust is I think trusting the audience, trusting the actors, like, there's a lot of trust in the mix. That like we're all smart enough to do this. We don't need a laugh track, so to speak.
Yeah, I agree with everything you say. I would only add that I think there are parts where they could go even farther with that. But that's also my personal taste. Mm-hmm. Like, I want less singing during the Christmas episode because I don't feel things on the inside. it's like part of that whole. I think every joke should be edited 4 words down more. Like, just make it as short, as small, as little as possible is my favorite. But I do think that the show does it really, really well. When it does it extremely well. And I really like it.
We get it, boss. Want more John Wick at Christmas. I get it.
How much?
There's just slightly less John Wick than you need in the Christmas episode.
Do I have a Christmas movie that I watch? I'm going to have to think about that. Scrooged, obviously, but that doesn't count. I'm sure I'm going to remember something where it's like, oh, right, you watch Fantine dying in Les Mis every Christmas Eve to get you into the mood. Like, that's what you're looking for. I don't know if that's true. It might be.
What a reference. Jesus Christ.
I'll need to think about it. I don't know if that's
you
true.
Watch
maybe.
Fantine dying.
Well, I'm not going to watch Eponine. Come on.
Oh, my God, boss. Jesus Christ.
What's the problem? What's the problem with that?
I'm a little lightheaded with how damaged you are. I can't.
Just because she accidentally fell into a life of prostitution and died from syphilis, you're going to act like that can't be a nice, heartwarming Christmas movie.
It's a beautiful song. Beautiful song.
Beautiful song. I would also like to mention the Midnight Train.
Me count the ways. I mean, it's throughout all great art.
Midnight Train to Royston, we mentioned, is a reference to Midnight Train to Georgia. I wanted to mention, I followed back up, it was Farrah Fawcett was talking to the guy that wrote it, written by Jim Weatherly. She said she was taking a midnight plane to Houston to visit her family. Jim Weatherly wrote the song and gave it to Sissy Houston, Whitney's mom, to record. And she said, well, my people are not from Houston. They're from Georgia. And we don't take planes. We take trains. So made him change the line. And then she recorded it. And then Gladys Knight and the Pips covered it. So it's a whole history. It's a great song.
I didn't even know Sissy Houston had sung that. So there you go. Learned something today.
Yeah.
I like when things like that work out, because usually that's a terrible, well, we don't take, first of all, we ain't from.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
My people don't take planes. Like, oh, Jesus Christ. All right. Like.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Lord. No, no. Usually it's like, oh, I'm sorry. You think I take the bus? Absolutely not.
I'm glad it worked out.
I'm on a 325 Uber to the office. Doesn't have exactly the same sort of
gravitas
to it.
That's funny. Okay, yeah. I'm still floored by your Les Mis. And I urge you to please, Die Hard is a Christmas movie. So... That's
Oh yeah. Also, no.
Welcome to the party.
The problem is that Die Hard with a Vengeance, Die Hard 3 is a superior movie. I don't know what to tell you about that. I can't help it. Samuel L. Jackson is there. Yeah.
Not even
I was about to ask, because they start to like cross pollinate and where I'm like, oh yeah, no, that was in the second one. Yeah, so thank you for that.
I can't pay attention after that, but
No.
Jeremy Irons in the third one. It's good shit.
Yeah. No, that's a very Led Zeppelin take. I would also say we watched The Ref at Christmas. And boss, have you not seen The Ref? It's got a lot of you in it. I have. Okay.
But also I watched that when I was watching Rescue Me. It was a Dennis Leary thing. Sure. And so I remember it, but it also gets blended in where it's like, oh, wait, no. That was the firefighter show, not the Christmas movie.
I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. Yeah, if you take it's got way more you than me in it. I'll say that. So, yes. Coach, were you going to say something?
No, I was just going to give a thumbs up to Rescue Me, which I very much enjoyed.
Okay. We are in the establishing shot outside Akufo's restaurant. We get a shot of the start with an outside establishing shot, move to an inside establishing shot, waiter crossing front, and Sam is screen left, Kufo screen right. They look like they have been enjoying the hell out of a meal. And boss, walk us through this, please.
So Sam says, I've never had West African food this good in London. I can't believe this place. I didn't know this place existed. He says, well, it doesn't. I had it created for us. I brought in my own chefs. I travel often, and I know what it's like to miss food from home. And then Sam sort of looks around the restaurant and says, actors, all these guys? And he's like, yeah, friends, yeah, but let's be honest, like, probably actors. I thought that it was interesting that when trying to woo Sam to come play for this team and be a part of what he was building, everything was so artificial. Like, he took him to a museum, which is amazing, but filled it. Like, you could have rented the place out. Why are you putting the actors in? Why go that extra step?
Yep.
It's to give it the appearance of being a communal thing when it is only about Akufo. And he is the only person in the restaurant that matters outside of Sam. So it's interesting to me that he wanted to go to that extra step. It wasn't just that he had enough wealth that he was going to do these things. It was that he was going to have enough wealth that he could also hide it. This is like the billionaire who wears $10,000 t-shirts. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm.
You know what? I love that point, boss. It didn't occur to me until you just said it. That's a great point. And really highlights Akufo.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Of character woven in there. That's a great point.
Yeah.
I know that we have a coach and I have a wealthy friend who has three kids, and they have like nonstop round the clock nanny support, never a day without a nanny or a housekeeper or a chef or something available. And so I always make fun of him for it. Luckily, we're close enough where I'm like, oh, really working hard parenting, aren't you? Like with your night nanny, you know, taking care of anybody that has the sniffle at night. And at least he owns it. He's good about that. But when Akufo says chefs, I was like, more than one, huh? Like just, I was like, you know, are you the billionaire that doesn't believe in billionaires?
That. that line, I think, is really significant, because I think that line is as much a part of the artifice as the other stuff we're pointing out, that there's a certain coolness, or, you know, I'm not one of those kinds of billionaires built in there. And maybe it was the accumulation of what we're describing, but the museum I found sort of amusing. I did think it was I started to not love it here. Like, there was something about you did it twice that did, like, there was a flag for me, like, okay, what is going on here?
Well, so you can't be in the world. You cannot be in the world.
Yes. Yep. He cannot exist in the world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is the opposite for me of when I was in college, and I'm not pretending that I'm the only person that's been in this position, but you started to recognize that people had different definitions of being broke. And so there were times when I would say to my friends, like, oh no, I don't have money to go out tonight. Like, I don't have money to go out to the bars tonight. And they're like, yeah, I know, like, I'm going to have to not buy that sweatshirt, and I'm going to have to do something else next week. And then I'm going to have to, and I'm like, no.
It's not an allocation issue.
No,
money coming down the pike right now.
I was like, I have $5 in quarters that I was planning to use on laundry. But unless you can give me like 4 shots of vodka before we head out, I do not have money to go out. And so it's just, like, figure when he says I don't travel without my chefs, it's like, oh, you're in a diff. I am Sam. I have money. You're in an entirely different fucking.
That's right. That's right.
We rip on wealthy people all the time, and the only reason that our friend is not insufferable, the one that I reference who's very wealthy, is because he is a self-made man. He came from nothing and built his fortune. And we go, whatever, all the power to you. Great, you came from nothing. Akufo is one of those guys where they say he was born on third base and thinks he hit a triple.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, he doesn't know anything. Go ahead, boss.
Well, what pisses me off so much about him is that what he acknowledges is, I only have money because my father was a billionaire. I want to not be a billionaire. I want to break up a lot of what he did. And it's like, okay, but you think that that makes you special. That you don't think that you're special because you're a billionaire. You think, oh, well, I am special because I'm one of those great billionaires that doesn't want to be a billionaire. And I'm like, do you know how easy it is to not be a billionaire? You just give away billions of dollars and then you stop being a billionaire.
Yeah, it's not that complicated. You're right. Like,
it's not that hard.
That's crazy talk. That's very difficult to give away money. I mean, that would be very here's the thing. I'm obviously being facetious. Your boss, can you imagine what their day would be if they just went to the best of everything that already exists? Like, if you're like, oh, you walk into the Four Seasons and you know, I'm trying to think of like the most expensive place in any whatever, you know, in London, and you get the best table, which he could do also, but he can't even do that.
Yeah.
He can't exist inside the strictures of society. He has to fabricate a dreamland.
Yeah. I was reading an article the other day about how there is a new burgeoning business of essentially like trapdoors, panic rooms, secret entrances.
Yeah, I read a few of those. Yeah.
In their houses. So it's supposed to be a safety precaution. So you have a hidden panic room so that if somebody breaks into your house, they don't know where to find you. But then also it's like, it's behind the bookcase and you have to pull this thing. And so they're describing one guy's house outside of Phoenix, and it's like, he's got a fucking amusement park in his basement. You know what? If you have the money, fucking do it. That's fine. Whatever you want to do. But what the guy said was, now I never need to leave my house. And I was like, what is the point of being rich if you never leave your house, even if your house is fucking awesome? Why are you not doing everything else in the world? And it's because at a certain point, it isn't about the experiences. It's about what your money will allow you to experience. You don't even care about going outside. You just want to have all the fucking toys.
I could talk about this forever because I'm fascinated by this concept. Not just like, okay, building your house or whatever, but hand in hand with the rise of panic rooms, whatever. It's a mistrust of society. So you say, okay, we're at threat. But also, there was a lot of press about the the knob that runs Facebook. What's that guy's name?
Zuckerberg
building his underground thing in Hawaii. Did you hear about that? His underground escape villa, whatever. And so here's my thing that I always like when I talk to people, I'm like, these people are so deluded. If the world is ending, the job to get is security. Okay, that's the job to get, because just think it through. The world is over, right? Okay. Like all these wealthy people have these hidden vistas, you know, underground, whatever. Okay, great. And to protect them, they have hired security staff and they'll say, all right, we're going to give you a room in the vista and in the villa and the underground villa. And I'm like, and then they have all the guns. I'm like, how long do you think it's going to take for the head of security to just take it over? I just don't get it. I'm like, why would they be loyal to you after the world is gone? It'll be Lord of the Flies. I'm like, what do you have to hold over them? Right now you have money. Right now then you have stability. But they're already in the villa. They're gonna take some like little weenie is gonna tell. I'm just like, it defies reason to me. But I'm like, I don't know, maybe I'm alone in that, but I'm like, I just don't, if we're talking about human nature, then it reverts to like, you know, the just survival of the fittest. It just becomes the strong survive. Once you get to that level, unless you can automate robots to protect you that are like coded to your DNA, I'm like, I don't know. It seems really weird to me, but whatever.
Well, I would like to say I fundamentally disagree with Lord of the Flies. People reference it all the time as like, this is what happens when you step outside of society and it breaks down. And I'm like, no, this is what happens when rich British boarding school boys step outside of society. This is when you already have a group of assholes who have been taught to be mean to each other and been taught that only the strongest person will be able to survive whatever. Even if it's like being the fucking king, because that's a thing that England still does. I do not believe that that would be widespread, that all of society would do that. We've actually had instances where groups of teenage boys, I'm thinking of one in particular and I'll need to find it.
Yeah, we must have discussed this because it started bubbling up as you were saying it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. They were in a shipwreck and they did end up on an island and they were there for 18 months and they not only took care of each other, but took care of each other to the point that I think one of them broke their leg or something and the other ones like mended it as best they could. Like in most situations, actually people aren't going to start cannibalizing each other the second that they fucking can. Would a billionaire? Sure. I believe that. I would not trust Mark Zuckerberg with my life in any situation. But if we got to the point where we are raiding Zuckerberg's underground bunker, it is because people are dying so much that like we've all decided we need to overthrow this motherfucker. So I would like to have a security guard on the inside.
But it seems crazy to me. I'm like, what? It's a volcanic island. You're surrounded by how deep? I'm like, what? All right, whatever. I don't.
I will find a way to come kill you, Mark.
It seems crazy. And also, like, it's such a fatalistic notion to like plan for the worst in that way. And also, they sell shares. So like, there are companies that now sell shares of like. Let's look. It would be like a vertical. Like a skyscraper, but going down, almost like Silo, the show Silo, but you know, a vertical sort of habitat. And if you can't afford, you're wealthy, but you're not Zuckerberg wealthy. You can still get a beautiful 3-bedroom, villa, you know, in this thing, and you pay for it your whole life. You keep making payments every month. I'm like, for the eventuality that society crumbles, I'm like, okay. Like the whole thing seems very, very crazy to me. But anyway, with regard to Akufo,
I'm going to toss this in.
Places? I'm guessing he has.
I absolutely think if he doesn't, he would decide. Like he would want he would build one, but he would only build it because you know he needs to. Like he obviously he's not.
He's not one of those guys. Yeah.
I just want to highlight, and we can share the link, but they did do an experiment where boys and girls, a group of boys was left alone and a group of girls were left alone in a house for 5 days and how that went. So all the Lord of the Flies talk made me think of that. So we can share that in the community as well. But I just sent you guys that link. It's very interesting.
Thank you, Coach. So Sam says, listen, I want to be honest with you. Coach, pick this up here.
I don't see myself leaving Richmond to play for, well, whatever team you end up owning one day, which is funny because we know that so far he's not revealed that. Kufo says, Sam, you are the fourth person to know this. In other words, if I hear this in the news, you're going to end up drinking some of Putin's poison tea. I'm buying Raja Casablanca in Morocco. My only focus in life will be to make us one of the biggest clubs in the world. Bayern, United, PSG, Barcelona, Casablanca. I will say, for all the other things that were done in this scene that rubbed me the wrong way, as somebody who's kind of good at getting people to join in on some shit that he's brewed, that he's hatched in the dark of the night, this was really well done. Like,
oh, so you like this?
No, I mean, it's well executed. Yeah. But
I wasn't sure if you're gonna go the other way. Okay, so
I like, because like even the way he uses his hands, he's like, I'm showing you the future. I don't know. I bought it. And then we have the greatest African players around the world will come home to play for us. Mark my words, in years, an African, in how many years? 10 years, I think. 20 years, sorry. In 20 years, an African team will win the World Cup. Sam, you inspired the world to care about what's happening at home. That's why I want you to come play for me. I want the incredible man you are, not the footballer. Although the footballer, too, is incredible. Little charm. Sam, thank you. I mean, you've given me a lot to think about. Please take all the time you need, Akufo says, very gracious. And then he says, you have 72 hours. So that made me laugh. Little bit jerky, but I thought it was funny. And then, hey, please finish the Joel off, huh? I insist, thank you. You know, I appreciate that you had it made the Nigerian way. Oh, well, I thought you'd prefer it, even though the Ghanaian way is better. So they go back to having their fun. Oh, I know we've been getting along, but I will fight you on this one. And so then playfully, let us fight then. And they both have a good laugh over the Joloff controversy. By the way, that is a real thing. I've seen people argue about it. So that is a real back and forth that Ghanaians and Nigerians do is over whose Joloff is the superior.
Right. Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's the one you find in Wisconsin.
Obviously.
In my experience.
Obviously.
So as much as I think Edwin Akufo, like, this is my whole billionaires shouldn't exist. The tax code needs to be updated so people can't acquire that much wealth. It's fucking crazy. Eat the rich. Mark Zuckerberg doesn't deserve that shit. Fuck Elon Musk. But Beyonce and Rihanna. I know that I shouldn't.
I get it.
But number one, when things are so stacked against you and you do it, there's a part of me that's like, fuck, man. Yeah. Get it. Do what you need to. And also, there has been outright theft of every African country. Mm-hmm. And all of their shit is sent everywhere else. People are like, oh, Africa. What an impoverished nation. I fucking wonder, or nation, even I do it. I wonder how that happened, that they're impoverished. Is it because you stole all their shit and put it in your British history museum? Why is there shit from Africa in your museum?
Yeah.
Britain, what are you doing? That's not your shit. Yeah.
No, there is a different vibe. There's a distasteful vibe as we may find anything Akufo does, he's always gonna land differently in the conversation than Rupert does. Or he just is.
Yes.
Never mind, like,
it just will. You
know. Yeah. So no, yeah.
If nothing else, then because what Rupert is saying is, oh, I'm gonna give every African player the chance to be on defense for my team. Any one of them. I'm not going to judge them.
Any
African player who is good enough to play defense. Only defense. Yeah. And at least Akufo was like, no, man, come back and get to play for the country where you were born. And not everybody wants to play. Like, John Oliver famously talks about how Britain didn't like him and he had to come to the U.S. because nobody thought he was funny there. And he loves being in the U.S. He loves America. So maybe he will always represent. Maybe he is more USA than I am. But that should be a fair chance. Like, becoming famous in England is on the same level as becoming famous in the U.S. And the fact that there's such a discrepancy between the Pacific South, or the, what's the word I'm looking for here? The Global South, I guess, is what they refer to it as. All of the countries that Europe went ahead and colonized the shit out of and took shit from. Every single one of them should have the same chance to compete for the best players they can. And so presenting this, even though I find him distasteful, I'm into it. I get you, Edwin.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you on that. I guess it's funny because I'm somewhere on that continuum because I definitely get the sort of the eat the rich vibe. Like, I'm not like, I get it. I guess my big thing is more practical than a lot of my stances, which is, you know, we could end hunger and have billionaires. Like that's the part that makes me crazy is I feel like it's like almost like, what do you want everybody to have exactly the same? I'm like, no, not exactly the same, but like, yeah, can we not starve some people while? Okay. So that's
this, you know. No, number one, obviously you're a socialist from what I'm hearing. Number two, it's just
exactly.
What a fucking commie over here. So, just because we have the funds, people shouldn't die. it's that shit. It's nobody is saying that you can't be devastatingly wealthy, disgustingly wealthy. Having $100 million means you don't have anything you cannot get. You can do anything you want to for the rest of your fucking life. And we could take the $140 billion other dollars that Elon Musk has and hunger in the U.S., but he won't. But he chooses not to. He decides.
I'm going to share a That's visualization. Fine. There's somebody who did this great visualization of the wealth, and it just it's about Jeff Bezos as well, but it's basically like shows you what a trillion looks like if you can't visualize a trillion, and you just start side scrolling and you just keep scrolling.
And it'll
show you like the GNP of the US and you go past it and it's the world GNP and you go past and you're like, oh my God. Like you just cannot believe. Yeah, it's obscene. And so I mean, listen, the unintentional victim here in this speech by Akufo is the Club Raja, which exists. And I would be like, what the hell? I'm like, what? This is a real club. And saying like Casablanca, nobody calls it that anyway. They call it Raja. But it's like saying, you know, the New York Yankees, the Boston Red Sox, and then like, you know, like a team, like a high school team. You know what I mean? Because Raja's never can't compete. It's not PSG. That's crazy. But it's interesting that this is the one that they frame. And it's also like that's also Morocco. It's not Nigeria. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah. Anyway, the whole thing is complex. But yeah, he does a pretty good job pitching. But you have the sense that Sam is still, you know, not fully. Yeah, Sam's like, I can't picture.
And I there's also like an interesting unspoken, I would call guilt trip built in. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't ever say, or you can stay here and, you know, play for the colonizers. But it's kind of woven into the pitch. And so it does put Sam in an interesting position of, like, if I like playing here, if I feel like there's the right situation for me, somehow it means I don't give a fuck about Africa. Like, what? Wait, what?
Yeah. And that's always a real big fucking issue too. It's so much of identity politics plays in not opposites, but slight differences off each other where it's like the fact that women ever needed to have a conversation about how guilty they felt because either they decided to be a stay-at-home parent or they decided to be a working parent. not even what they decided. The fact that that needed to be a whole fucking conversation where they felt guilty one way or the other is, it is a way of coercing a person into your perspective where you don't need to, you prey on their emotionality around it instead of saying, I would like you to come play for this team that I'm going to meet. Great. He's like, or else you could stay with Whitey. You want to stay with Whitey? I mean,
seriously. And I'm glad you brought up the example you brought up, because the number of women I've known personally who've shared like the deep, like serious levels of guilt they feel, either about not being able to be the baked cookies mom or about whatever. And it's real. And I go, that is so interesting, because I won't say I've never heard of, like, I've definitely, I know a lot of guys who are involved at school and like, you know, but I can't think of a guy I think honestly stays up at night over whether or not he could help with some bake sale. If you can't help, you can't help. I'll help you guys next time. Like, whatever. Like, not an ugly way, but just like, why, you know, you were at work. It's not like you were, you know, tanning.
Yeah.
But at any rate.
I'll buy some Girl Scout cookies from you if that's what you want. You want me to send you to school some chocolate chips?
I mean,
I can buy them.
Make it happen.
Like, you know, I was tanning, but good luck with your bake sale.
Yeah, no, that's
tanning.
I would.
Sorry, I got a tan.
Also, only like to mention that because I translated the Spanish poorly, I thought that the team name was Red White House. I was like, fun. Well, that's interesting. But it's not Roja.
That's Raja.
That's different.
That's funny, though.
Yeah, Raja. I was like,
Is it Raja?
Red White House.
Yeah, I don't know. Like Raja. Raja was the name of the lion in Aladdin, or the tiger in Aladdin. That's yeah. What's her name's tiger?
Princess Jasmine.
Did I tell you guys my Aladdin story? That was like the first, like Daphne, the first time we hung out. She, I had mentioned I hadn't seen Aladdin. And she decided, oh, wouldn't that be nice? And so she like borrowed a copy of Aladdin for us to like hang out and watch at my room. And I was a broke college student. So I got my old change jar out and bought us a Chinese food feast. And that's probably still one of my favorite dates we've ever had. True story.
Oh, yeah. That's so sweet.
Which was my reaction. I was like,
whole new world,
really do. I don't do a lot of sweet.
That's really sweet.
So I really liked that. I was like, yeah, that's really nice of her. I like that.
Did I ever tell you my The Lion King story?
No.
Oh, my boyfriend's dad died. And then like 3 days later, it came on TV and I was like, you've never seen it? And then we sat and watched it. And I was like, oh, right.
Oh,
this
my
is
God.
Not. Oh, this God. Is not what you should. You shouldn't be watching this right now.
Boss, what is
Jesus.
I didn't mean to. And he was fine. It was like not that serious of an issue for him. He was okay. But as Mufasa dying.
Watch Mufasa fall right here. You're going to love this.
I think on the plus side, the only saving grace was he was like, I'm a grown up. I'm a 39-year-old man. And this is a cartoon for children. I'm not really that interested in all this. So I think we just turned
really? It off. Because I will share. I went to, and it was not 3 days late. I would have been a puddle. But it was about 6 months after my dad died. I went with my nephew. So I had the very interesting experience of my nephew and I used to play Lion King when he was little, which is why I ended up taking him to this.
Oh, yeah.
So
I was
always Scar because he was in charge of casting. And he was always,
sure.
You seem like Scar to me.
But I'm sitting there next to him. So we have that connection on The Lion King. So I had the experience of like associating myself with Mufasa on one side and with, why did my brain just go blank? Main character, Lion King.
Simba.
On I know why I blocked that out, but it's a whole other story. But anyway, Simba on the other. And It was hard. Like I found myself thinking like maybe this was not the cultural experience for this moment in my life. Like
maybe this was not the call.
So I get it. That's a lot.
I could take the next hour and a half chronicling how much I hate The Lion King.
Really?
Oh my God, I hate it. I hate everything about it except for Be Prepared, which is such a great song.
That's a good, yeah,
we were so excited about The Lion King, my friend and I, and we heard this song ahead of the show, and then so we got into this one song, and love Jeremy Irons, and then thinking, oh, it's going to be great, and then I hated the messaging, I hated the choices. I'm like, I could not believe they made a show that, you know, whatever, where they kill off the dad in the first. Like,
we don't have to have this conversation now, but yeah,
I seriously
would love to have this conversation. I'm very curious.
Yeah, we'll do it. But we'll have a very special episode.
Do me a favor, never have that conversation with my younger brother, Brian, because he loves The Lion King so much that even though our niece, the oldest one, was like 2, maybe 3 weeks old, she was a baby, when they re-released The Lion King. And he insisted the entire family go. And when Rafiki holds up Simba to the masses, my brother picked up my niece and held her up in the theater.
Absolutely not.
Because he wanted everyone to know.
Oh, my God.
Like, supported her head.
You
did
say your brother's like loves the weed, right? Loves the, right? Is that the same?
Oh, yeah, that makes
sense because, like, I mean, the whole concept is following the dead. And don't worry, because then a chick will bail you out anyway. It doesn't matter. So just do whatever you want. Give them time, babe.
You're not going to find a lot of chambers who don't like weed. I just for to start, most of us, like a lot.
That's funny.
And not just my the Chambers family, like the larger the Chambers family.
Worldwide Chambers,
I one time said, yeah, the two memories that remind me most of my childhood are BO and pot. Like that's, I was raised by hippies and I don't know what else to tell you. So yeah, no, that's all true.
I like it.
Okay.
They had them chambers like a hot box. I like it.
Yes. I like the thought that I would have to refrain from saying this to Brian as if I would ever meet him, as if I'd ever be in the vicinity or be welcome around Chambers's.
Never.
Because, no. I would never be allowed into the nexus because I would just...
We prefer chain by.
Just, you know, as a note.
Coach, where do people find you if they want to find you?
I like that you just gave up. I like you just like, you know what?
I hit my that's it.
Okay, yeah, all right, we're done.
My limit for the day.
Put this away.
WeAlign.AlignP.com. Our community, we are building. Come through, check us out, leave a comment, make it happen.
Boss, what about you?
So this week I'm going to say only at Blue Sky because I haven't heard anything horrific about them yet. So at Blue Sky is Dumbly Chambers, all one word. Also, I promise eventually writing at The Antagonist, which is antagonistblog.com. I have like 6 different ideas floating around and I need to get half of one down onto the digital page and get that.
It's so frustrating to be, you can imagine as a colleague, boss being my boss, is a very difficult situation since I have to listen to her all the time since she is my boss. Over at the blog site, I am her editor. And this is the little bit about how the sausage is made. Boss will say on the message board, she'll be like, hey, what about this as an idea? And it's such a great idea. And we all go, yeah, Jesus Christ, write that yesterday. Holy shit. It's not just me. It's the managing editor and then, you know, every other person on staff. And she's like, yeah, all right. And then she's like, actually, you know what? What about this idea? And we're like, holy fuck, yes. Also, please write that. And then you get 6 ideas down the lane and none of them get written because, again,
I'm gonna
chain by like weed. So what I'm saying is...
Chain by like weed.
Chain by like
that's
weed.
That's a t-shirt.
It's true.
That should definitely be a t-shirt.
That should be a t-shirt.
That's fair.
Right. Yes, but boss is full of
great ideas. I'm going to do it.
And... She's talented. She contains multitudes, everyone. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for joining us for this episode. Thank you for sticking with us as we waltz our way casually through the rest of Ted Lasso season 2. We will continue on with part 6 after this. I would love to say we've got 12 minutes left, including credits. I'd love to say it would be a six-parter, but I think it'll, you know, in my experience, we do talk. So, thank you, everyone. Thank you, everybody, for listening, for joining us. Please continue to support the show. It is what keeps the lights on. For those of you who are on the fence about subscribing, please consider it, because the pay goes directly. We have never made a dime off the show. Never have, never will. We'd love to, but it costs a lot to actually put a podcast out. You'd be surprised. It is not cheap. Yeah, and so we have never turned a profit. This is a labor of love, and we do it because we love it. And hopefully, if you're getting something out of it, you love it too. So thank you, everyone. Please, if in lieu of subscribing, make sure to, you know, write us a review, or at least click the whatever the thing is to subscribe, because believe it or not, that does affect some stat that gets us, you know, ratings and rankings, and we're right on the cusp of sort of being featured in certain formats. I think, like, I was looking and it was like the top 60 podcasts in our category get featured, like, on Apple Podcasts, like the top 60, and we're at 72 right now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's like, if we get that little bump, you know, we might actually be able to, you know, break even one of these months. So anyway, yeah, thank you, everybody. We really, it means the world to us. Please continue to support your local libraries and the written word. And until next time, we are
Richmond. Till we get high and die. Get to be king anyway, because that's awesome.
Yes, that's it. Yes, coach. Oh, thank you. That's exactly right. What a great way to end. All right, everybody. We'll see you next time. Thank you, coach. Jesus.
The TEDcast is a joint venture between Pajiba and The Antagonist. Visit us at pajiba.com and antagonistblog.com.